Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store, in for Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. On August 8th, FBI agents executed a search warrant at Donald Trump's private residence at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. They were looking for classified documents the former president was required by law to send to the National Archives. Agents are now reportedly going through the seized documents. While investigators work, the FBI has been receiving multiple threats and political backlash for its involvement in the investigation. In Ohio, a man attempted to break into an FBI field office and was ultimately shot dead by police. In Pennsylvania, another man was arrested on charges of making threats of violence against the FBI. And the search has provoked strong rhetoric from Trump's political allies, like Florida Senator Rick Scott.
The way our federal government has gone, it's like what we thought about the Gestapo and people like that, that they just go after people. What we thought about Soviet Union, what we look at Latin America, we have got to say to ourselves, this cannot be our country. We have got to say, we're a country of laws, not of people that are attacking their political opponent and get away with it.
Attorney General Merrick Garland has declined to release more details about the search, but on August 11th, he did have a few words to say about the agents involved in the investigation.
I will not stand by silently when their integrity is unfairly attacked. The men and women of the FBI and the Justice Department are dedicated, patriotic public servants. I am honored to work alongside them.
With us today is Andrew McCabe. He joined the FBI in 1996, served as the deputy director from February 2016 to March 2018, and acting director of the FBI from May to August 2017. Andrew McCabe, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kimberly.
So have you been surprised at the kinds of rhetoric and the threats that have been directed to the FBI since they executed the search at Mar-a-Lago?
You know, I guess I would have to sadly say I'm not surprised simply because of the, you know, the heated rhetoric that seems to surround all of the issues of our politics lately, particularly those dealing with the former president. And then on top of that, the irresponsible and inflammatory way that the former president and many of his political supporters have discussed the search and the aftermath of the search at Mar-a-Lago. I think when you put all those things together, the fact that we have an elevated threat picture targeting the FBI and its people is a pretty foreseeable result.
So you have firsthand experience about what it's like when there is a relentless pressure and scrutiny on FBI officials in the face of a very public investigation, particularly one where the subject is very high profile. Can you talk about that, what it is like when the FBI is conducting an investigation while simultaneously facing that kind of scrutiny and rhetoric?
Sure. It's, you know, it's thinking back to my experiences in the FBI as deputy director during 2016, when we were trying to complete the investigation into Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server. And at the same time, trying to figure out a really unprecedented level of Russian malign cyber activity, and then ultimately the question of whether or not the Russians were assisting or coordinating with members of the Trump campaign in any way. It's just an incredibly, incredibly stressful situation. Really issues of first impression for any FBI director or deputy director or FBI agents and investigators really to have to confront. And it is not a situation that any of us ever wish to be in. The FBI does not, you know, it prides itself on being an independent institution. FBI people, of course, have their own opinions about things and hopefully are engaged as productive citizens in politics on a very personal way. But that stuff does not come into the office if you are an FBI agent or professional support staff or a leader. It just so happened that the matters that we felt we had an obligation to investigate were inextricably intertwined with political figures and the political election. And that really ratchets up the pressure on the people involved and the people overseeing those investigations to make very hard decisions carefully and in a way that's effective in the investigative context, but also fair and as unobstructive as possible. And some of those decisions, I think we made very well. Others we made mistakes on. But I think all of that, when you put it in the context of the immense pressure and attention and the public interest in those investigations, it's just a very, very kind of toxic environment and one that's hard to navigate as an investigator or an FBI leader.
So talk about being a leader during your tenure. You face very public criticism from the former president and his allies. Then Attorney General Jeff Sessions actually terminated you. A subsequent civil lawsuit you brought reversed that decision, expunged it, and restored all of your benefits and your retirement status. But just talk a little bit personally, how was it to conduct your job while facing the very public criticism? What was it like for you, and how did it affect those below you?
You know, it's really, it's so strange and so, it was so unprecedented, it's hard to describe. But I'll tell you, it's unbelievably distracting and kind of personally terrifying in a way. I remember in October of 2016, President Trump began to attack me and my family personally, particularly my wife, in his campaign speeches and his rallies in front of his supporters. And, you know, as a leader in the Bureau and particularly one involved in investigations of at that time, the president's political rival, Hillary Clinton, you know, you have this incredible pressure to not acknowledge it. You certainly don't say anything publicly. You don't respond to then candidate Trump's attacks. You try to ignore it and brush it off, and just keep your head down and keep working and get your job done in the fair and straightforward way that we do that work. But you know, you're surrounded by subordinate leaders and investigators and people who are looking to you to set a tone as a leader in the organization. And they hear these attacks and they see these things and they're wondering, like, what's going to happen? Is this, you know, it's totally reasonable for them to start thinking, like, is this going to change his decisions about things or, you know, affect the way that we do this work? And you absolutely cannot let that happen. So I tried to the best of my ability to navigate those things by really holding my peace and not ever saying anything, never responding. I don't have really any sort of social media profile or activity. I didn't then, and I still don't now. And to try to constantly convince your, you know, the folks that you're working with that, like, it doesn't matter what you're seeing in the news. We are going to continue to do our jobs in the fair and passionate but aggressive way that we always do as FBI people. And setting that tone as a leader is absolutely essential. And it's even more important, you know, under these times of great stress.
So I want to talk about this search warrant that was executed for Mar-a-Lago a little bit. Can you explain what goes into executing, first obtaining, and then executing a search warrant like this? I would suspect that the process is even more stringent when the person involved is a former president.
Absolutely. So any search warrant is predicated basically on two things. The government has to prove to a federal judge two issues. One, that that a crime may have been committed, and two, that evidence of that crime is located in the location that you are requesting to search. So in this instance, it would be obviously Mar-a-Lago and the president's former president's residence. And the burden of proof there is a simple beyond a reasonable doubt. So you don't, actually, I'm sorry, the burden of proof is not as high as beyond a reasonable doubt. It is a very simple kind of preponderance of the evidence standard for a search warrant. So you would go forward to the judge and present the facts in an affidavit, and make the argument that a crime's been committed and that evidence is located in that location. That's obviously what happened here. Now, in a normal situation, that happens probably hundreds of times a day around the country in FBI investigations in every state. I can tell you from personal experience, dealing with these very high profile, volatile, politically connected subjects, this is something that was discussed and considered at the very highest levels of the Justice Department and the FBI, to include the Attorney General himself, as we now know, for probably weeks and weeks before it went forward. And every fact in that affidavit, every, I'm sure, was confirmed to the absolute, greatest extent. In addition to that, the government always has a responsibility to use the least intrusive means possible when conducting an investigation. So before you get to a search warrant, you do other things like serve a subpoena, like make contact and request access to materials that you think are maybe located at Mar-a-Lago. We now know that all of those things happened over the course of many, many months. So I have to say, as search warrants go, just from the information that we know publicly, this one was absolutely as clear as day. The government knew, based even just on their own meeting with the president's staff, former president's staff at Mar-a-Lago, they knew that materials that were classified and sensitive and government records were located on the property. So I would expect that the affidavit they presented to the judge was really beyond any question, any reasonable question.
And you said that FBI agents, when they enter this field, they don't think about investigating former presidents. That's not what they do, and this isn't the preferred position to be in.
That's absolutely right. Like, nobody wants to be caught up in an investigation that's political. But at the same time, we can't back away from an investigation simply because it implicates a political person. To do that,
well, I'm going to pause you right there, and we're going to talk more about that on the other side. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Storr. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Storr. Today we're talking about the threats against the FBI, threats of violence like we saw in Cincinnati, and political threats like defunding the FBI in the wake of its role in searching former President Donald Trump's residence. With us today is Andrew McCabe, former FBI deputy director and former acting director. And when we left off, you were talking about investigating the president isn't something the FBI seeks to do, but it's something that it can't shy away from doing. Please continue.
Sure. So, Kimberly, FBI agents think of themselves as going in and conducting investigations and, locking up drug dealers and violent criminals and people who abuse and traffic and children, all this wonderful work that agents do every day around the country. And unfortunately, there are also investigations into political corruption and public matters. They are absolutely necessary, but not the kind of work that most agents are looking to conduct, because everybody knows the issues and the pressures that come with them. Those things are magnified a thousandfold when the subject of your investigation or the person implicated by it is a former president, and particularly one who has a history of attacking people who are involved in investigations of him. But to not do that work simply because it's political, simply because you're concerned about how, in this case, former President Trump would react, would be a much bigger problem. right? This, we cannot take the chance that we create two separate systems of justice in this country. To shy away from investigating issues having to do with the former president would essentially be doing just that, creating a political class of people who are not subjected to the same rules and law enforcement, rule of law, that the rest of us are. So it is a stress-filled and tough part of the job of being an FBI agent or an FBI leader, but it's absolutely essential that they do it the same way for everyone.
There was reporting over the weekend by the Washington Post and Wall Street Journal about FBI Director Christopher Wray's desire to stay out of the spotlight and political fray, but at the same time reinforce to senior FBI officials his anger about the attacks on the FBI and assure that everything is being done to protect them. How does Director Wray walk that line of trying to stay out of the politics, but also confront the political blowback that he and his agents are facing, particularly when it comes to threats against them?
Well, I think first and foremost, there's nothing inherently political about defending your people. I think that, I wasn't just an FBI leader. I was an FBI agent for 21 years, and I know what it feels like when the organization is being attacked publicly. You look to the director for a sign, for a lead, for a message that he supports the work that you're doing and that he supports the FBI mission. And that those displays of support, they can't just be internal. It's important. FBI people want to see that their leadership defends them publicly as well, which is what they deserve as dedicated public servants who are simply doing their jobs according to the law. So I think you have to do that as the FBI leader. And that's not political. And to the extent that that risks provoking the ire of political figures who have spoken out against the Bureau, then so be it. Like, that to me is a risk that you have to take to defend your folks when they deserve it. And they certainly do now. So I was critical of Director Wray initially. There were a few days there when this all started off that we really did not hear much from him. It's maybe a difference in our approach to the job, but I think that a full-throated endorsement in defense of his people, both internally and externally, is the way to not only stand up for the institution, but to support the people that are doing this work every day.
Attorney General Merrick Garland held a press conference 3 days after investigators searched the president's residence.
The department did not make any public statements on the day of the search. The former president publicly confirmed the search that evening, as is his right. The department filed the motion to make public the warrant and receipt in light of the former president's public confirmation of the search, the surrounding circumstances, and the substantial public interest in this matter. Federal law, longstanding department rules, and our ethical obligations prevent me from providing further details as to the basis of the search at this time.
Andrew McCabe, that was the attorney general speaking, not the director of the FBI. Some of that reporting over the weekend that I referred to indicated that Director Wray is concerned about mistakes of past FBI directors. I think most notably, former Director Comey spoke very publicly about the investigation into then-candidate Hillary Clinton's emails. Do you think that that is a line here that he's trying to walk to be more circumspect in this moment? I know you said you think that it needed a full-throated response.
I'm sure that the specter of former Director Comey's decisions, particularly within the Clinton email case and announcing the results of our investigation on, I think it was July 5th of 2016, I'm sure that that is hanging over Director Wray's head, as it should, right? That's a... The comments in that statement were too detailed, too focused on the case, probably should not have been made by the FBI director at all. But that doesn't mean that in this situation, you can't make an effective public statement that addresses public concern and also defends your people. And I think that A.G. Garland did exactly that. He had a sound legal basis for addressing this very corrosive and destructive narrative that's out there kind of, you know, distracting his workforce and undermining the work that they're doing. He was very clear in his defense of DOJ and FBI people, which I thought was great. And I thought he threaded the needle, you know, particularly well. So I think that's an example of doing it the right way. And I think the AG, being the representative of that, he's the right spokesperson. Nevertheless, there's also a role for the FBI director to stand up for your people if you feel like they're doing the right thing. Doesn't mean that FBI people don't make mistakes. They do. It's an organization of human beings. And when people make mistakes, then you have to be public in your acknowledgement of that in terms of holding people accountable and improving the performance of the organization. But this is a place where, look, what these folks did was executed a search warrant, right? They went in front of a judge. They made a showing of probable cause. It appears from the way they conducted the search that they gave the former president every possible consideration and courtesy that they could, and showing up during business hours and doing it in a very kind of quiet way. The media didn't even know about it until the former president made his public statement. So yeah, I think there's nothing that we know at this point that undermines or would discredit the work that they did.
One legal battle that is underway right now is whether to unseal the underlying affidavit for the search. That is something that the Department of Justice opposes. Some other folks, including news organizations, want it released in the interest of transparency here. What impact would unsealing that affidavit have? Isn't transparency important, but could it impede the investigation?
Sure. So transparency is important, but there are some other very important things to consider here. And they kind of go on both sides of the coin. On the one side, releasing all of the facts and information that you had at the point of the search warrant before the investigation is concluded, before anyone has even been charged with violating the law, runs the risk of exposing the investigation and the witnesses and sources of information that you've developed that could really undermine the future progress of the investigation and undermine the Bureau's ability to kind of mitigate a potential threat to national security here. On the other hand, releasing that sort of detailed factual argument that's in the affidavit also runs the risk of prejudicing the public's opinion against the subject of the investigation unfairly. Like, let's remember, it hasn't even been alleged that someone has committed a crime yet. The Bureau is doing the work right now to try to figure out if that's happened and to try to understand whether or not they should go before a judge and request a charge, an arrest warrant, that sort of thing. So we're not even there yet. So you run the risk of really undermining the effectiveness of the investigation and, you know, unfairly harming the reputation of the people involved.
I have one last question for you. Our time is running out, but what do you think the solution is when it comes to the FBI really battling back from the politicization of the organization? Do you think there is reason for hope that a solution to this can be found?
Sure. And, you know, as a unapologetic supporter of the FBI, like, I'm totally biased here. I'll admit that up front. But I believe there's only one way for the FBI to conduct itself, and that is apolitically, based on the facts and the law, to stand up to the enormous obligation they have to investigate threats to national security and possible violations of federal criminal law, and just keep doing that work in a fair and unbiased manner. What's happened, people talk about the politicization of the FBI. It's not that the FBI has become politicized. It's that the results of their work in the hands of politicians has been spun and attacked in political ways. And really, like, that's the period that we need to pass through here. It would be enormously helpful to everyone, not just the FBI, but the people who depend on their work, for folks in political leadership positions on both sides of the aisle to discuss the FBI and their work in a way that's not designed to curry favor or appeal to the base or whip up people's frustrations and grievances. Let's simply stick to the facts the way that the FBI does. you know, conduct appropriate oversight, hold the FBI accountable when that's necessary. But let's not constantly be trying to cast every decision that's made in the Hoover building as something that's seeking some sort of political advantage or disadvantage, because it's simply not. And it's an unfair and really unhelpful way to treat that organization.
Andrew McCabe joined the FBI in 1996, served as the deputy director from February 2016 to March 2018, and acting director from May to August 2017. Andrew McCabe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Kimberly. I appreciate it.
And joining us now is Dennis Lormel. He spent 27 years with the FBI. He's now a consultant and the president of the Society of Former Special Agents of the FBI. Dennis Lormel, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to our discussion.
So I want to talk about your personal experience in a politically charged investigation. You, for example, were involved in investigating campaign finance, potential campaign finance violations during the Clinton years and financial crimes after 9/11. What from your experience are FBI agents experiencing right now trying to do their job in the face of such a public and politically charged investigation?
Well, I think that's a great question. And what the agents have to do, what I see them doing, is to continue to perform their jobs. And as Andy said before, to do so within the framework of the law, to carry out your responsibilities to investigate the allegations at hand. And in these particular cases, especially when you're dealing with political sensitivities, to understand those sensitivities and again, to conduct your investigation as objectively as possible within the framework of the law and to follow the evidence where the evidence takes you.
Florida Republican Senator Marco Rubio said last week that the search of Mar-a-Lago was political.
This raid was about trying to disqualify a likely future election opponent, about trying to intimidate Republicans who oppose the left, and about creating a distraction from Biden's failures.
So, Dennis, you say the job of the FBI agent is to put all of that aside. But when you are seeing, when they are hearing members of the Senate, other political figures really question whether this is politically motivated, what kind of problem does that cause?
Well, it could certainly cause a morale problem, and it certainly hurts the integrity of the FBI or the perception of the integrity of the FBI. As Andy said before, you know, I'm very biased. I served 28 years in the Bureau, and I'm very biased toward our fidelity to our jobs and to what the Bureau does. I think that allegation, and it's easy to make those allegations, at the end of the day, what's important are the facts in the investigation, how the facts come out in the court of law, how they're presented in the court of law. The court of public opinion is one thing. And unfortunately, Senator Rubio, you know, used a platform where he was able to bring in the argument of politics the way he did. We don't know the facts, and the facts will come out. The fact that, you know, one of the facts is that a search warrant was signed by a federal judge, and that search warrant required probable cause. So I think it's important, and I think it's important for the agents involved in this to continue to do their work. It's very difficult from the standpoint of being, you know, for all of us as individuals, when we get that type of criticism, especially when the criticism is unjust, to have to withstand that. But it's important that the agents, you know, maintain their focus, continue to do their investigation, and let the facts develop and let the facts come out. At some point, those facts will come out, and I think it will put the investigation, hopefully, in a more objective light. I look at somebody like Senator Rubio. It's easy to criticize, and it's hard to distinguish. And I think when you look at people who are critics, I look at them and just look at them from the standpoint, are they being objectively critical, or Are they being defensively critical, or do they have another agenda? In the case in point here, when I look at the politicians going back and forth, you know, I see either defensive or agenda-driven criticism.
So have you experienced the sort of threats that we have seen against FBI? You know, I'm going to actually pause you there, and on the other side,
yes.
I'm going to ask you about your experience with experiencing the kind of threats that have reportedly been made against the FBI. We're discussing the politicization of the FBI, threats against the Bureau, and its role in the investigation into former President Donald Trump. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Storr. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins-Storr. Today, we're talking about the FBI's role in the investigation into former President Donald Trump's handling of classified materials, the claim by some Republicans that it's politically motivated, and the serious threats against the FBI and Justice Department officials. We are joined by Dennis Lormel. He spent 27 years with the FBI. He's now a consultant and the president of the Society of Former Special Agents of the FBI. So, Dennis, talk about the threats against FBI agents. Did you experience those types of threats at this level? And if not, what do you think has changed?
Well, I think law enforcement, when you look at law enforcement, we deal with very dangerous people. Threats are constantly there. However, threats of the magnitude we're dealing with now are different. And let me, if I may, Kimberly, in February of 2022, and again in June, Homeland Security came out with threat assessments, national threat assessments, which the FBI participated in. And they talked about the serious level of threats of domestic violent extremists that presented, and that they were looking for issues that they could gravitate to. And this, the issue of the search warrant and the politicization around it and the inflammatory rhetoric around it has driven the level of threats to me, as far as I'm concerned, to an unparalleled level. And I believe, you know, based on those intelligence reports and what we're seeing today, I don't know that the public actually understands the level of threat that the FBI and law enforcement more broadly is confronted with as a result of this.
And so you're talking about those threat assessments. You anticipated my next question, where I was going to ask you about that specific flag about violent extremists here in the United States. For a long time, including during your time at the FBI, there was a big focus on the terror threat that came from outside of the country. And in recent years, even before February, it became increasingly clear that the greater threat was presented by domestic violent extremists. Do you think that that's part of the reason why we're seeing this increase? Do you think that the focus was misplaced before that put the FBI in a worse position to sort of deal with this now?
The way I would characterize it is that the domestic threat, and we have the threat the domestic threat is caused by both domestic violent extremists and homegrown violent extremists who adhere more to the international jihadist ideology. Both threats are very important and very concerning. But I think that these are opportunistic threats and that people in that mindset, and if you look at the radicalization process, let's look at that real quickly. You know, you go from kind of a sympathizer to an activist to an extremist. And what this violent rhetoric is doing, it's accelerating that process, and it's creating a lot of emotionalism that brings people, crosses over that level of extremism to violent extremism. For instance, what we saw in Cincinnati with that individual who tried to attack the FBI building, and then the person that was arrested, I believe, in Pittsburgh last week. You know, that those types of individuals, I think when the investigations come out against them, they may have some sort of radical affiliation.
So we talked with former Director McCabe about what goes into obtaining a search warrant, particularly against a high-profile subject like a former president of the United States. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Do you think that it is important for the public to understand just how the FBI does its work, not just the results of their investigation?
Yeah, I think that whole process of the determination, because of the political sensitivity involved, because it's the former president of the United States, obviously that's a very extraordinary situation. And, you know, when I've been involved in many searches where I've been the affiant in the affidavit, and you know, what we tried to do is put probable cause in that affidavit that the judge would believe, as Andy said before, that there was a crime, that the venue that we're going to search has evidence that goes to that crime. Now, when you look at the level of sensitivity that you're dealing with here involving the president, this decision had to be carefully considered, and it had to go, you know, and as it did, through the attorney general for approval. And the other thing I would say about that is, you know, in a case other than a case like this, when I was putting together the probable cause to put into the search warrant, I would put in a level of probable cause that I thought would be sufficient for the judge to approve. So I wouldn't be putting everything in there. Now, in this case, because of the sensitivity involved, I would assume, but I don't know because I'm not involved in the investigation, that they would be careful to put more probable cause into the warrant. And so what concerns me about the idea of now releasing the affidavit is if, in fact, there's more probable cause in there than would necessarily be required, you know, that could endanger people. And the thing I'm concerned about in that respect is that we see serious threats against FBI agents, against the judge, against other law enforcement officials as a result of this. If the names of witnesses come out from that affidavit, if you can suspect, if the names are redacted, if people can speculate who those individuals are, they're in tremendous danger for that. And so I look at that from a safety standpoint as something that concerns me greatly.
So what do you think FBI Director Wray and Attorney General Garland should be doing and saying at this moment, as you heard me speaking with former acting director? What do you think they should be doing from the perspective of a former FBI agent?
Well, there's no easy answer there. In a perfect world, I would want them to be as transparent as possible. And in being more transparent, we would deflect a lot of these issues and the criticisms, and especially the way I talked about the criticism before, that's agenda-driven or defensively driven. I think that would offset that greatly. Unfortunately, that type of transparency, because of the nature of the case, because of the nature of the warrant, it's just not possible to be as transparent. And then you have grand jury considerations also, which hasn't been discussed here, that you would have to consider. So I think that the statement that Attorney General Garland made in his press conference was pretty strong, and it was to the point. I think Director Wray is in a more difficult position because the Attorney General really should be the point person there. But at the same time, Director Wray should be standing up for the men and women of the Bureau. And he's come out with a statement internally that was a pretty strong statement, and he keeps coming out with statements against violence. He really is in a position where he can't talk about the specific facts of the case, and I understand where he is in terms of maintaining that lower profile that you talked about earlier about the Washington Post article, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I understand that, and I think he has to balance this very lightly, but he also has to come out very strongly in defense of the men and women of the FBI.
I want to talk a bit about the impact of the public criticism of the FBI. Congresswoman Liz Cheney, in an interview with ABC News' Jonathan Karl, said this about Republicans' reaction to the FBI search.
I was ashamed to hear Republicans immediately and reflexively attack the FBI agents who executed the search warrant. I was disgusted when I learned that President Trump had released the names of those agents when he released the unredacted search warrant, and that has now caused violence. We've seen threats of violence. The judge himself, his synagogue, had to cancel services because of threats of violence. This is a really dangerous moment.
Dennis, what impact, both currently in this investigation and long-term, do you think these public attacks on the FBI and also its agents and even the judge that issued the warrant, what impact do you think that's going to have?
Well, the immediate impact is on the safety and the continuing threat. I would just hate to see anybody get hurt as a result of this. But more importantly, in the long term, you know, the FBI stands for fidelity, bravery, and integrity. And I think, and again, I have a bias here. I think that the FBI has long been viewed, and rightfully so, as the preeminent law enforcement agency in the world. The type of criticism that they're receiving and the innuendos about politicalization and things like that diminish that credibility of the FBI, and in a lot of people's minds, it really presents a bad image of the FBI, and I think it tarnishes the reputation, and I think that's really something that I find extremely disappointing and concerning, and that's why in part some of this rhetoric has to be toned down because I think it's disingenuous.
There are some who have been trying to, as you said, tone down the rhetoric. Former Vice President Mike Pence, speaking at a political event in New Hampshire on August 17th, said Republicans are the party that stands with law enforcement, and calls to defund the FBI are, quote, as wrong as calls to defund the police.
And in the wake of the 4 years that we endured, the politicization of the FBI, the American people have a right to know the basis for this. This unprecedented action does demand unprecedented transparency.
So, Dennis, the former vice president does two things there. He continues to claim that during his tenure as vice president, the FBI was politicized, but then says these agents shouldn't be attacked. What would you like to hear from public officials right now in this moment about the FBI and its agents? What do you think will help be a solution to the types of threat and violence we've seen?
Well, you know, I, again, to put the agendas aside, And certainly from the standpoint of criticism, to be objective in that criticism, you know, the comments by Senator Scott that the FBI was the Gestapo or was related in some way to Russian law enforcement, that's incredibly harmful. And perhaps he doesn't understand what the Gestapo stood for, but to analogize the Gestapo with the FBI, that's a terrible analogy. And that's the type of inflammatory stuff we've got to get away from. We need to bring it back, ratchet it back. And to make it objective, I think objective criticism is good. If people are concerned about the legitimacy of this search, let the facts be presented. Let the facts come out in court. Unfortunately, sometimes that takes a great, you know, a great period of time for an investigation to mature. And I know that, you know, we as a society are a fickle society, and we want answers right now. And sometimes that's just not possible. So I would encourage people to be more patient. I would encourage people, especially if they're going to be critical, to be more objective in their criticism, and not to be so, you know, we talk about the politicization of the FBI, but I mean, the politicians who are talking all have their own political agenda in their criticism. And so there is a lack of objectivity to a degree.
So what are the solutions? Are there things that the FBI should do, changes that it should make to sort of ward off this sort of political attack against them? Does the solution lie outside of the organization about the way we think about or talk about the FBI? What solutions do you think might work here? And do you think that there is hope that this sort of reaction to the FBI, to this type of investigation, can be different in the future?
Well, that's very difficult. You know, again, we don't live in a perfect world, so there's no easy solution. And what I think it really requires is that, you know, we need to look at, the FBI can't shy away from these types of investigations if, in fact, there's probable cause that a crime's committed, regardless of who the subject is. The FBI has to make the hard call, and they have to do it in a very deliberate fashion, and to ensure that their action is not politically driven. And I think there needs to be dialogue about this, you know, from the standpoint, when we look at this event, from the standpoint of an after action, what we would call in the FBI a hot wash, is go back and look at this. How could we have done this differently? How could we somehow have public outreach to an extent that we can to try to tamp down the misinformation and such? And so, you know, that's part of the answer. Part of the answer is if we, as you know, as the public sector and the private sector, or the general public, could have some sort of consensus or some dialogue back and forth about these things.
Dennis, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us. Dennis Lormel is a 27-year veteran of the FBI. Thanks for joining On Point.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm Kimberly Atkins-Store. This is On Point.